welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, here with you every Tuesday at noon and Friday at 6 p.m. And we are on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. We can do these shows thanks to the generosity of Windermere Vashon Real Estate. They support all our community information programming and make our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at windermerevashon.com. Real Talk is the show where we seek and explore questions, large and small. And of course, healthcare is one of those great big questions we all have on our minds constantly, particularly as we get older. And today I am honored to have with me Marcia Stedman, who is the president of Healthcare for All Washington. Welcome, Marcia.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
And Debbie Jackson, who is a volunteer with Indivisible Vashon's Healthcare Focus Group. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you very much.
You two have provided me with an incredible list of legislation that has gone on in our very own Washington State Legislature. And gosh, it's kind of heartening because we keep hearing about the federal government and how it's gutting Obamacare and healthcare is on the ropes nationwide, but not so much here in Washington. And Marcia, I understand that the title of your organization is Healthcare for All. How are we doing in that regard?
Well, we made some significant strides this session. We have a study bill that passed the Senate called the Pathway to Universal Healthcare. It did not pass the House, but it did get a line in the budget of the House for providing $500,000 to fund a work group that would study how we could provide universal health care in the best way to our state. And this funding would subsidize, would pay for an econometric study for a consultant to do one of those and to convene a work group of interested stakeholders, broad array of stakeholders, quote-unquote, from insurance companies to consumers to patients to community health advocates, businesses, labor, healthcare providers, hospitals, clinics, state agencies, and legislators.
So are you saying that all those folks are going to be involved in this study group?
Representatives from each sector, yes. It's going to be kind of a largish but controlled group. And it will be under the auspices of the healthcare authority. They will convene the group after July 1st when the bill, we're assuming the bill is actually being signed today by the governor of the budget so that everything will be activated after he signs and it will be go into effect on July 1st of this year.
So the study group will become active July 1st of this year?
Yes, it can be formed then.
So what kind of hope do you have that Washington State can actually create universal health care, particularly if the insurance companies are involved in this study group?
Well, we do have hope. We have lots of hope. But the reason for it, and it will be difficult to please health care insurance carriers, but the reason we are inviting them to the table and including them is because we need to have buy-in from all sectors of society that are impacted by such a program, and that includes all of us.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very important part that they need to discuss also, which is called a just transition, and that is means providing for a way to transition employees that have no longer have their past jobs because we have eliminated a lot of the work that insurance carriers do now that is bureaucratic and negative to the providing of actual health care, that is the claims denial departments, and eliminating the need for high shareholder dividends and a CEO and management salaries. So it's an enormous shift once it's carried out, but this is a first step to see how can we get there. If we have to go step by step, what's the first step, the next step, and going onward that way? And this pathway is a pathway. The first step is to look at the options, look at how much revenue we have in the state, how much we need to spend on health care for our residents, and ways to spend it more efficiently, to contain costs, to possibly do some cross-state regional collaboration in buying health care products, like such as pharmaceuticals and any other like durable medical goods, but we'd probably start with pharmaceutical consortium buying. It just opens up a lot of areas that we know we need to streamline on, and if we're going to get a handle on our costs, contain the costs, and ensure or provide care without barriers to everyone in our state.
Lofty goal. That is a lofty goal, and I am a cynic when it comes to the participation of insurance companies. So, in the past, insurance companies, insurers, have threatened to pull out of the state if any state, including ours, is heading for universal health care that would then be paid for by the state. Do you have any notion of whether the state can go it alone without insurance companies?
Well, the state already covers at least 50% of the health care provided in our state through the Medicaid program, the AppleCare, and other programs that they must pay for their own populations, their employees and their retirees, and there's the jail population, things like that. So they do already provide some. What this bill would do, actually, the bill, as it was written, depended on the State-Based Universal Health Care Act in the federal government. That was, first it was sponsored by Pramila Jayapal, and now it is in the hands of a California representative named Ro Khanna. And that was enshrined in the bill as being a prime source of funding once we get better, more friendly government in Washington, D.C.
Hmm.
And that would possibly occur in 2021. But this State-Based Universal Health Care Act would streamline the provision for getting access to federal funds and regulatory support so that our states could get access to the Medicare funds that are normally now paid to individual Medicare recipients. The trust would be formed, the entity would be formed to accept those payments, and then those payments would flow into that entity, and it would be administering the program that way. The state would be, in effect, the insurer for needed necessary medical care, including dental and vision.
That's really exciting.
It is exciting. I'm glad you think so.
Yeah, I think everybody would. We could go on talking about that particular issue for the entire half hour. I'm looking at Debbie here, and Debbie, I want to know from you. You gave us this long list of healthcare bills that I believe have passed or are on the path to passage. Which one of those is most exciting for you?
I wanted to follow up on what Marcia said, because I think it is an exciting bill, and that is one that relates to long-term health care. Marcia mentioned that Medicaid funds a lot of health care in the state, and one thing they fund quite a bit is long-term health care, so that people who have exhausted their funds can remain in a nursing home or an extended care facility. The legislature passed is actually HB 1087, and that will, starting in January 2022, start taking a payroll premium or tax from people who are working in order to help fund a long-term health care fund that people can rely on. To me, when reading it, it sounds a little bit like Medicare, where you accrue credits and you have to have been in the program for 10 years in order to be able to draw on that. People that are 65 and over, I think now, wouldn't be able to draw on that.
Oh, really?
But, right, because they wouldn't have contributed to it. They're already on Medicare and that sort of thing. But I thought that was pretty exciting to be able to fund that. It'll actually reduce costs for Medicaid by having a pot of money for long-term health care within the state. So I think that is pretty exciting. The other one that I think is really good and sort of a precursor possibly to Medicare for All is what's called Cascade Care, and that's a public health option that individuals can access through the state where you get your individual health care through the state exchange, and that will start on January 1st, 2021. And again, it's a public health or a public option for individual health care. There'll still be insurance companies that are on that exchange that you can choose, but for people who don't who can't access private insurance, they can go to this public health option.
Is that going to be higher priced?
Yes, it will be. It will have some caps on the premiums that people can, or the, excuse me, the charges that providers can receive. And so that in that way, it should be, I think they're estimating 10% less, somewhat less than your private insurance would be able to offer. And so we'll have caps similar to Medicare, but higher. I believe it's like 135% higher than what Medicare pays now, which is pretty low, but still be less than what your private insurance would cost.
So, Marcia, do you know how people would qualify for the Cascade Care public health plan?
Well, anyone who wanted to opt to have the benefits that are standardized in these plans that get developed would be able to participate in that. It would depend on but it relies on private insurance or profit insurance carriers administering the plan.
Oh, it does.
So they are going to be setting up a new network. Each one of those have to set up their own new network, which is probably going to be narrow because they have to search for doctors that will accept the lower reimbursement rates. The highest rate they'll be paying is reimbursing those doctors is 160% of Medicare rates, and the health insurance carriers wanted to get 300%. They thought that would be effective, and they could be more free to establish a network. So it was interesting going to the hearings and testifying on these bills and hearing what the other testifiers had to say, the insurance companies and doctors organizations. They weren't happy at all with the beginning when the plan began to be discussed. They just couldn't. They basically said, "Well, we can't make money if we have lower premiums." They didn't say it that way, but that's what they meant. So it was very revealing. But in a way, this Cascade Care is public in that the plans are standardized across the entire state. Like Medicare has standardized plans mm-hmm. that are available all over and have to be offered all over the country. And then there's also a public notice and comment period every year before the plans are finalized. So that's the public gets to weigh in on the plans. That's what I read in the bill anyway. It's going to have a public reporting, mechanism in it. There's going to be, they are going to have to report to the legislature on the impact of linking this program to the public employees benefits program, the state employee benefits program, and the healthcare authority programs. And in that way, I'm thinking that this is kind of a workshop for figuring out if there's a way to contain costs while utilizing the private insurance carrier model.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Delivery.
That'll be very interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know that brings to my mind the constant question of whether we can ever have health care that works for everyone if it remains a for-profit industry. What are your thoughts on that, either one of you?
Well, I'll jump in and say, no, we can't really, because no other country, well, all other industrialized countries have a regulation that insurance companies have to have, well, they do have, some have insurance companies, but every country that has a more regulated by the state insurance healthcare delivery system has lower costs, and they have better outcomes than the United States. We pay twice as much of our costs for healthcare are twice as much per capita as in many other countries of the world, and our outcomes are near the bottom of the list when compared to those same countries.
So we isn't that the definition of insanity to keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result? Why do we keep doing this?
Well, we have a for-profit industry. We have people that are making their living, and they're making huge investment incomes and exorbitant salaries off of healthcare. They're not providing any value to the healthcare of our population either. So it's like a real drain on our economy, and it's a drain on our citizenry. We have so many problems in this country, and we could really be better at solving them if we had our manpower adequately allocated to solving those problems instead of earning huge returns on our investments and on our work that is not really very productive for the public good.
Mm-hmm.
The opioid problem, we need more healthcare providers. Mental health, we need more facilities, more healthcare workers. We need people that are actually in the trenches doing the work and giving many other people a living wage to do this helping work for their neighbors and in their community.
Well, and let's go to the mental health care question, because I see a number of bills here that have mental health and substance abuse in their titles. One is House Bill 1099, Health Network Adequacy, Mental Health and Substance Abuse. Another is House Bill 1199. No, that's not it. Behavioral Health, House Bill 1394. Behavioral Health Community Facilities. And then there's Behavioral Health Innovation Campus. And then there's Behavioral Health Reciprocity and Behavioral Health Integration and Children's Mental Health.
Yes, it was a big session looking at behavioral health and mental health, substance abuse issues, and I think made great strides in extending services out to people in the communities. There one bill will start a behavioral health program up at the University of Washington. There'll be a 150-bed facility. It'll be a teaching and treatment campus within the medical school. So I think that will help to increase training and outreach and a number of things related to mental health.
Will that include substance abuse treatment, or is it all mental health?
I believe substance abuse is included in the behavioral health legislation.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. There's legislation that's looking at having facilities in other parts of the state. Right now there's Western State, there's Eastern State. There used to be more hospitals, but this legislation would be looking at expanding that network of treatment facilities throughout the state.
And is that funded? Yes, go ahead, Marcia.
Oh, I don't want to interrupt. I'll wait.
Well,
but I wanted to.
No, it's good.
I wanted to point out that the community facilities, behavioral health community facilities, are quite important.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just can't build enough institutions, and is that huge brick institutions for people for mental health services. So, and studies have shown that it's more effective to have these services available in the patient's own community, closer to their daily lives. And so this is exciting too, a new way of delivering services, being more the community health center model rather than going to a huge regional hospital for services.
So that's Health Bill 1394, Behavioral Health Community Facilities.
Uh-huh. Yes, it's that one. Uh-huh.
So that's funding for additional facilities?
I don't know the ins and outs of that bill, so I might have spoken out of turn, but I know that there's talk about how that needs to be done, and I think that this might be that bill that addressed that.
Well, and do you have any idea how that differs, if it does, from this is the UW Behavioral Health Innovation Campus you were talking about, Debbie.
Right.
Oh, yeah. No, that's different. Yeah. The Behavioral Health Innovation Campus is teaching about and providing services, but that's another area that's for community.
Mm-hmm. So, go ahead, Debbie.
Oh, I was going to say there's also a bill that was passed that looks at healthcare worker or mental health care worker reciprocity, so that you can healthcare providers, workers coming from other states who've been certified in their state can come here and receive and be able to practice a little bit more easily than they have been able to. So the hope is to increase the number of providers that can provide mental health services and substance abuse.
So going down that rabbit hole, if we add more certified healthcare workers or mental health care workers, will they be covered by insurance, by the state insurance policy, or in whatever universal health care happens? That's not here yet. So how will those people be covered?
Do you know Marcia?
The new practitioners, yeah, who are more easily certified from out of state.
Well, they will be, I imagine they will be either part of an insurance network or in private practice, and they will, use the system that's in place. I mean, as far as, being paid, they will be people that will be paid for their services. I don't quite understand your question of how they would.
I guess I was concerned about, okay, if they come here and they're easily certified in Washington State, then I presume they'll be covered by any insurance companies that serve in Washington State. And was this bill the result of a shortage of practitioners?
There is a shortage. There is another bill that looked at requiring health insurers and insurance plans to notify people when they do not have when there are not enough providers to provide service. So that if you are on a waiting list trying to get in to see a mental health worker, that the goal is to not let that process drag on forever, that you're out there struggling and you need service and your insurance company needs to be upfront and let you know that that's a problem. So I think there is a shortage of workers here. And just like Marcia was saying, and this is a bit of an assumption because I don't know all the details, but that people who receive reciprocity from other states would be certified and be similar to workers that are already in the state in terms of reimbursement.
I see. Going forward on the behavioral health legislation, there's behavioral health integration, House Bill 5432. What can you tell us about that?
I'm not as well informed about that one. Put it on the list. And maybe Marcia knows a little bit more.
Marcia?
No, I do not. I'm actually Googling it, right? Whoops, what was that number again?
5432.
5432, okay.
And then right below that is 5444, forensic mental health competency. What the heck is that?
Oh,
I don't know.
There's a bill that is looking at commitment laws, commitment regulations, and when somebody is ready to be discharged from that commitment. I don't know the details. And I think just right here, I'm going to insert, since there's a lot of details on many of these bills,
mm-hmm.
That if people are interested in a particular bill and they want to follow that through the legislature, they can go to http://leg.wa.gov to the Washington State Legislature page, and it will have a link to their bill tracking information. So you can see where it came, where it was first introduced into the legislature, all the way up to where it's been signed by the governor, if we're lucky, and look at the details and actually access the legislation. And and I think that's the best way, if you have an interest in a particular legislation, to go ahead and do that. It's pretty simple to do.
That's a great idea. That's a good resource.
Yeah.
What about children's mental health? Senate Bill 5903. I'm lumping all these mental health bills together because it seems to have been a focus of the legislature this session.
Does
either of you know what the Children's Mental Health Senate Bill is covering, and it apparently passed May 9th and is to be implemented July 28th, so it's coming right up.
I think that again studies some more the issues of childhood mental health and what is needed to provide better services to the children in the state. Again, the details I don't have on that one right here.
So let me ask you.
No, but that resource you mentioned, Debbie, is really super for people to go to the legislature website and just look up the bill number. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't have
leg.gov/legislature, right. I'm guessing. But Marcia, you have experience in covering all of this healthcare legislation and what's happening with healthcare in our state. How would you say, particularly this session of our Washington State Legislature, compares to how other states treat healthcare?
Well, okay, so that's an interesting question. There are quite a few states, more than 20 states, that are actually, they have active organizations working for a universal healthcare program in their state. It's called the One Payer States Network. And the state of Oregon is working on getting the state-based universal healthcare legislation in the federal government passed. They are also working on their own state efforts. The state of Colorado has passed a work group bill that's similar to the pathway bill in the budget proviso, in the House budget, that would provide a work group to study single-payer healthcare. And their report is due at the same time that ours is due, which is November 2020, after the election of 2020. So there's a lot of activity all over the United States, in selected states, New York, Pennsylvania, California, Hawaii has some, Maine, in various levels of Minnesota, various levels of activity and completion. So it's very encouraging to hear.
That is encouraging. And of course, my guess is that it's a reaction to the federal government gutting Obamacare and making many back steps in healthcare.
Well, it is, but these organizations have been working some for decades.
Ah.
Like Healthcare for All Washington has been working on this issue for close to 30 years. In various incarnations, really heavily for the last 10 years.
Wow, so would you say it's an idea whose time has come?
I would say. And I would say the reason we got such good traction in the legislature this year in our state is because of the 2018 elections, the candidates running on health care reform, and that is due to the most likely due to the Republican pushback on Obamacare. Across the nation, we saw that. And so we have a super majority of Democrats in the House and near that in the Senate, state Senate. And then, of course, we have Governor Inslee, the Democratic governor.
Right.
So it's definitely, it was a watershed year for all kinds of legislation, and especially progressive legislation on health care.
Progressive legislation, which is, anything that refers to what's good for humans. I hate to break this to you, but we're down to our last minute. So, Marcia, you had an announcement to make, and so did you, Debbie. Marcia, tell us quickly about your legislative debrief.
Okay, there's a legislative debrief happening on June 4th from 5:30 to 7:30 or 7 in Seattle. It's at the Washington State Labor Council, and it will have feature our healthcare sponsors, David Frocht, Emily Randall, and Nicole Macri. We'll be there to address and take questions from the crowd, and then we will also be detailing our successes this session from Healthcare's Human Rights Coalition. This is, and we'll provide light refreshments, and we have an announcement and an RSVP form that I'll send out to you, Susan, and Debbie, so that you can send to your...
We can add it to our website and our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's a legislative debrief June 4th in Seattle. And Debbie, what's your announcement?
I also want to make a shout out to look at healthcareforallwashington.org's website.
All right, Debbie.
Check out our blog and our posts.
Thanks. Just real quick, there's a Vashon Town Hall with our legislators, Senator Joe Wynn, Representative Representative Eileen Cody, who's chair of the House Health Care and Wellness Committee, and Joe Fitzgibbon on June 3rd at 7 to 9 p.m. at the Methodist Church. So hopefully we'll see you there.
Thank you both for joining us, Debbie Jackson from Indivisible Bashan and Marcia Stedman from the Washington, or for the Healthcare for All Alliance, Washington State. Washington Healthcare, say that again.
So Healthcare for All, Washington, and Healthcare is a Human Right.
Thank you both for joining us. You've been listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. Stay tuned. You never know what you might hear next on the Voice of Vashon.